I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, November 2nd, 2019, and this is episode 39 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So I have an announcement. My chapter of RWA, the Maryland Romance Writers, is having their annual auction, and I am giving away 2 hours of WordPress website maintenance or training. And so if you're listening to this in November of 2019, the auction ends at the end of the month. You can bid to win my services if you have a WordPress website that you would need maintenance or you need to know how to do something that you don't currently know how to do. If you're interested in that, you can go to MarylandRomanceWriters.com/auction, and the link is in the show notes. So this week's best thing is Sleater-Kinney. I went to the Sleater-Kinney show. They were in D.C. last weekend. My brother was in town, and so he came with me. And he was not a Sleater-Kinney fan, but he had been, over the past few weeks and months, slowly listening to their catalog. They have, I think, 9 albums now. And I don't think he got through all of them, but listening to them and trying to understand why I love them so much. I don't think he quite understood, but the show was very good. He enjoyed the show. He likes the newer stuff a lot more. I like the older stuff more, but I really didn't like the newest album that much. But after seeing them perform, I think all of the songs on the new album live, I went back and listened to it and it made more sense. So yeah, it was a great show. I'd never been to the Anthem in DC before. It's a new space because they took the waterfront that used to be there and they demolished everything and they rebuilt everything in like a whole new, one of those town center kind of things where there's a bunch of shops and a big event space and hotels and apartments. And it was just, at the end of, in Southwest DC, where there used to be, clubs and restaurants and where you get on like the boats, like Spirit of Washington and the Dandy and these like dinner cruise boats that would sail up and down the Potomac. So I've actually been there a couple times before, but it's still new to me. I don't know how old it is, maybe 5 or 6 years old. It could be older than that, but it's all still new to me because I went to Howard University and I lived in DC. None of that was there. But that was a really long time ago now. So this is the 20-year anniversary of me graduating from college. So it's been a long time and DC has changed so much. So, so much. I've got feelings about it, but things move on. Progress happens. Or what we call progress. It may or may not, actually. I mean, in some ways it's progress. It's new things. It's cleaner and safer. But it's no longer Chocolate City. It's no longer, as far as I know, it's no longer a majority black city. And that is sad. They cleaned up and swept all the black people out and gentrified everything. And now it's completely different and barely recognizable. And it makes me sad a little bit. But I'm not often the type of person who is, has fits of nostalgia. I'm not super sentimental. Probably because my memory is so bad. People are always being like, oh, Leslie, you remember that? And I'm like, no, I do not. And then if you start to like jog the memory, then I access those files that are deep, deep in there in the recesses of my mind. And I can bring up some things, but from a day-to-day basis, I retain very little of the past. Take from that what you will. Writing update. Before that, I wanted to do, this week was, a lot happened in terms of just authory stuff. So I thought I would run down quickly this week in my author life. So I got the copy edits for book 3 of the Earthsinger Chronicles. They're due back in 2 weeks. I got the line edits for a short story that's in an anthology coming up, which are due in 2 weeks. I was invited to 3 different cons and I have to figure out which ones I want to go to and how it fits in the budget and everything. At some point, pretty soon. I was reminded to contribute to this article that's supporting another anthology that I'm a part of. I received the cover art for book 3 of Earthsinger Chronicles and had some feedback for it. It's basically done, but I do have some tweaks that I hope they're able to make. And I also received the cover art for the second novella that I'm self-publishing, and that was perfect. I signed off on that and actually took the art and put the title on it to make the cover. So I hired an illustrator to do the cover, but I still do the title work. So the cover is ready for the novella. I'm going to get the pre-order up at some point, maybe this week, if I can, and then do a cover reveal. But I will probably reveal it first in my Facebook group. So there'll be a link in the show notes if you are interested in joining that group and would like to see the cover before everyone else. Yeah. And then, of course, all of that is on top of the actual writing. So there's a lot to do. And a lot has been added to my plate for the next 2 weeks because of these various deadlines, in addition to the other deadlines, which I already had. I don't know how that's all going to get done, but we will make it happen some kind of way. So the writing update. I'm trying to remember what happened. I know that I cut the first chapter. So that's 3 total chapters that I've cut. I had been sending it to my friend Denny, who's my critique partner. And I think I said before that she hasn't read all of the other books in their entirety, but I still think her feedback is valuable in terms of this book. And she brought up some really good points about the first chapter, and it was hard to cut. But I really didn't end up having to move a lot of the stuff that was in there into other places, which really reinforces that cutting it was the right decision. So now that was the intro for one of the POV characters. Her next chapter is now her intro, and I think it works. I think it works better. Part of the challenge of this is book 4. I want to recap, because if people are reading them in real time, then it will have been 6, 8, 9 months. I don't know exactly when this book is coming out, but several months since book 3, and people forget. I forget between books. So I want to recap to re-jog your memory, especially with characters who weren't prominent in book 3 but might have been prominent in book 2, because, you know, I'm bringing in everything. Everything is fair game in this book. So there's that balance of when you're first introduced to the character's POV, remembering who they are, what they've been through, and what their motivations are to get to what they want in this book. So that first chapter was, it was a lot of new stuff. It was a lot of where she is now mixed with the recapping. And then, like, nothing really happened, you know? Like, there was a scene and things happened, and she noticed things, and she was thinking about things, and she was remembering things, and then she was doing things. But it was fine to cut it all out. So I did. And it was painful. It put me back in my word count that I wanted to hit. But just things that have to be done. So getting feedback while you're writing can be difficult and can be distracting. A lot of times if I'm getting feedback while I'm writing, I'm not trying to go back, you know, so I've given somebody something that I've moved past in the writing, and I won't be ready to go back until much later on. But the advantage of that is when you're on a deadline, sort of getting that real-time feedback, if you do have the time to kind of look at it, evaluate, make some changes as you're going, it can speed things up. I think that focusing on getting that feedback at the very beginning, so I can make sure that the hook is there, and at some point in the near future, I'll probably send the first 50 to 75 pages to my agent to get her read on it as just another set of eyes on the beginning. And once I feel pretty good, like I've stuck my intro and hooked people into the rest of the story, then I'll keep moving and see if there's time for a beta read or some type of other eyes on the whole thing closer to the end. That's the current plan. Other things I had to do in the writing, I had to really think about setting. And as I'm revising, I am really trying to not have to do too many other passes, because I don't have time for a lot of passes. So I'm really trying to evaluate all of the parts of each scene. And so I was working on a scene and thinking about the setting, like, why is this set here? It was in I discovered that I had set a lot of scenes in various parlors and sitting rooms. and they're in different places. I've got characters in different castles. There's two different castles, I guess. But I was wondering, is there too many parlors? Could I set this in a more interesting location? And so I turned to One Stop for Writers, which is its website, and they've, you know, I've talked about it before. They've got, in addition to the thesauruses that they have, they also have a lot of worksheets. And they have a setting checklist worksheet that I downloaded that has a whole list of things that you should think about with the setting for each scene. So like, why is this setting the best choice for the scene? Well, they have to have a conversation and they're in a castle, so they could walk, they could sit somewhere. Like, there's a couple of options for how you can have this conversation. And then there's also, what do I want to achieve with this setting description? And there's a whole list of things: creating conflict and tension, poking at an old wound, to deliver backstory, to steer the plot. There's lots of different options. So I was thinking, well, can I have a setting that, you know, does more work, that is creates more conflict, that allows me to delve more into the backstory? Like, what am I trying to do with the setting? And I ended up keeping it in the parlor because I thought that having the juxtaposition of these various sitting rooms that these various characters in different locations are in was interesting enough, and that it worked, you know, because there's definitely all kinds of other locations that are going to not be parlors. But I am keeping my eye on, you know, how many of the same types of locations are there, and can I change them, and can they do more to do something, you know, like, am I getting the most out of them? So that's kind of just an example of one of the things that I think about as I'm going through the revision. Also, I had to create a game. I was doing something where I was adding some meat to a scene. Like, it was very sparse. My first drafts are very sparse because of fast drafting. And so I was like, how can I convey in this scene that my character is not a part of this society? So he's in it and he can maneuver through it, but he's on the outside looking in, even though he can kind of successfully fake being one of them. And so I added a couple characters who are, you know, part of the aristocracy, and they're having a conversation about something that is going to show that, you know, my main POV character is not one of them. And so there's, you know, these teenage boys, older teens, you know, young adults, but talking about a game. And so I needed a game. I needed sort of an upper class game that my POV character wouldn't know anything about. And I was looking at naming it. And so I was like, oh, where did the names for cricket and polo come from? Because I immediately thought of cricket and polo as like upper class games that the rabble doesn't know anything about. And I don't know, maybe cricket is more popular in England among the, you know, middle class and lower classes. I have no idea, but it sounds very posh to me. And so then I chose a name for the game, and like, naming things at this level, I have to know the names, before I wouldn't, but we're at the stage where I have to make those kinds of decisions. And so, yeah, I named a game, and I don't know if it'll ever come up again, but I added it to my story Bible, and maybe it can make an appearance. There was another game there's a mention of briefly in Whispers of Shadow and Flame that I was able to bring into this book in a different scene with different characters, because it is a game that common people play. And so that gave me another idea for this. So that's kind of why things are taking long, because as much as I'm doing all the writing, I'm just making all these decisions about world building things and how all of these little details can support the characters and their arcs and the plot and everything like that. Still fun, but slower than I want. So I'm at the Baltimore Book Festival this weekend as I speak. I had 3 panels yesterday. I have 1 today. I've got 2 tomorrow. And this will be the last event of this year for me, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't have another event until January. So it's been sort of a whirlwind. July was busy. there have been lulls since then, but it's been, yeah, the past few months have been extremely busy, and I'm tired. Also thinking about what I'm going to do next year and trying to plan out, you know, travel and conferences, festivals, the events for next year. So in thinking about planning for next year, I came across something that referenced the Derek Sivers concept of if it's not a hell yeah, then it's a no. The idea that when you're asked to do something or when you're presented with an opportunity, it's not just yes or no. It's if it's not a hell yeah, then it's a no. And there are times when that doesn't make sense. But I think I'm at the time when right now it does make sense. So just looking at, for instance, one of the invitations for a conference that I was invited to, and I hadn't heard of it before. I was trying to do some research. It's a smaller one. And, you know, I'd like to go places and meet people and support things, but it can be taxing and difficult and expensive also. And so I have to look at the budget and figure out what is going to make the most sense for me to spend money on and go to. And I was trying to just like, oh, well, maybe if I did this and maybe that. And I realized, well, this is definitely not a hell yeah situation. And I'm not sure if Derek Sivers, I think it's attributed to him, but maybe he got it from somewhere else also. But it is something to keep in mind as there's lots of opportunities. And a lot of them, because you don't know what things will lead to, I do tend to say yes a lot because, you know, things have led to really interesting, exciting other things that I had no idea were even possibilities. But there's definitely a time to say no. And just in my current state of tiredness, it'll probably be a lot easier to say no to more things. It is a philosophy that lacks nuance, and so it can't be applied across the board. But I think in certain situations, it makes a lot of sense to evaluate things, with your excitement level, or whether you feel obligated because, there's no obligation, but it's nice to be asked. You know, I feel flattered and, you know, I do like to go places and go new places and things that I haven't heard of and things that might mean new events or just new situations. But obviously you can't do everything. And so, yeah, I think for now, applying the hell yeah versus no philosophy is going to do me well for this period of time. I also saw some article about this man who was live tweeting from, I think, the Austin Film Festival, where the creators of Game of Thrones were spilling the tea, shall we say, about how they didn't know what they were doing and all of these mind-bogglingly frustrating, like maddening revelations about their process and how they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't ask for help. They didn't have anyone else in the writer's room. How clueless they were through this whole thing, especially on the heels of the fact that HBO just canceled the Game of Thrones prequel that they were going to do, the one that had been announced and cast and the pilot had been shot and it was full of black people. And HBO was like, no. And I don't know who the showrunners were for that, but I just found out that one of the writers who I had taken a workshop from, David Anthony Durham, had been in the writer's room for that. So you've got black cast and some, you know, black people behind the scenes of this Game of Thrones show. And that is no longer going to happen, apparently. But the original creators were allowed to make something and they didn't know what they were doing. And by the end, it becomes very clear when it makes so much more sense. Like everything's falling into place, you know, seeing what they were saying about it. And as someone who, you know, grew up always hearing that you have to work twice as hard to get half as much as white men, essentially, and every example of it being true, I mean, it's not really surprising. Like at a certain point, you knew that they didn't know what they were doing anymore, but just the level of it and everything that it represents is just so staggering. It's so frustrating to be a creative person who works so hard to try to create a good product and to just put a lot of heart and effort into it. And I'm not saying that they didn't put heart and effort into it. They kept saying they spent 10 years of their lives on this and they gave up so much to do these things. And so what can we learn from this? What is the takeaway from this? I'm not sure, you know. Maybe there isn't a takeaway. Maybe it's just, this is the way the world is. The world is unfair. It's always been unfair. And you just do the best you can do. I'm not afraid of hard work. I do the work because I want to, because I'm invested in it and in doing the best job that I can possibly do. And so you can't really look outward at what other people are doing and allow it to derail you or really change anything about what you're doing. You can just, I guess, watch and observe the realities of the situation. Keep that in mind. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, every opportunity that comes to me, I really feel bad about not accepting, because I know that nothing is guaranteed, that every opportunity is a chance to grab hold of something that maybe other people take for granted, if that makes sense. Because I know that there's an imbalance, that the playing field is not level across the board. I think I do feel some sort of pressure to just grab hold of everything, every chance, because you don't know if another one is coming, and you don't know what it might lead to. And I hope that's not a scarcity mentality, because I try not to have a scarcity mentality. I think there's enough space for everyone. I don't look at other writers as competitors, because readers read a lot, you know? But there is that mindset. And I think a lot of probably women and people of color who are involved in art and entertainment would understand that there are fewer opportunities. There are fewer quality opportunities also. And I feel very lucky and privileged and grateful to have my book in bookstores and have the opportunity to talk to people and reach people, you know? And I don't like saying no to any of that. But so yeah, I really don't think it's a scarcity mentality. I just think that it's the reality of life, and coming from a place where you know that you have to work really hard and you have to push really hard in order to get to that same level that maybe someone else started at. There's always the notion that if I fail, you know, if someone like me fails, they're not going to always get the same opportunities that a mediocre white man would get when he fails. And, you know, Game of Thrones people, the creators, they didn't. Did they fail? You know, did they? Like, they created this juggernaut, this huge thing. They have a lot of cachet because of what they created, even not knowing what they were doing. The first few seasons were great. You know, when they left the source material, it took a hit, definitely. The last season, most people were disappointed by. So did they actually fail when they created something so beloved, even with all of its problems, you know? And it's not just about marginalized people. I mean, across the board, who's to say who gets these chances and opportunities? But you know that when you're dealing with an uneven playing field, there's far less room for error. So yeah, I don't know. That kind of pressure, though, takes a toll. You know, it takes a toll on your mental and physical health to constantly feel like you're running on a treadmill and not going anywhere. you know, or you're running uphill when everyone else is running on flat ground, or when another group of people are running on flat ground, because it's not everyone else. So yeah, a lot of people, especially on the original, the person who tweeted it originally was, you know, relaying the information, but actually responding to a lot of the tweets and promoting the responses that he was getting, because he was like on our side. He was like, I can't believe these guys are saying this. This is insane. And there were a lot of strong reactions to that. So, but such is life, you know, what are you going to do? So my goals this week, make a very long to-do list and try to get as much done as possible. That's the only way it's going to happen. But overall, the writing is going well. I'm happy with what I have. I'm a little daunted by the future, but moving forward. It's November 2nd, so NaNoWriMo is in full swing, and I have no idea if this whole 50,000 words of revision is going to be a realistic thing, but I'm going to keep pushing forward and see how close we can get to that. So that's it for me for this week. I hope you have a wonderful week. For episode show notes and to subscribe to the Footnotes newsletter, which is the compendium for the podcast, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. I got a URL, so I'm going to try to start using it. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more podcasts you'll love, check out frolic.media/podcasts. Happy readings.